All right, we are back. It's Lions Collective. We're live every single week. On Wednesdays, I'm in a new location. Mike probably sounds like poo-poo, but we got a lot to talk about. All right, Detroit Lions defense, we're going through it today. The Lions also signed somebody today. I don't know if that's even worth mentioning. Cedric Wilson, wide receiver. Cool, it's awesome. Congratulations. But we're going to talk about the defense today. But before we get into that, how are you guys doing?
Not as good as Cedric Wilson. I mean, I didn't get a job today. Oh, we lost Will. That's good. We're good.
I'll fix this.
I don't know what's going on. I'm doing okay. Probably better than Virtue is right now. I think we'll bring him back in a second here. But I'm going on vacation next week, guys. Going to New Orleans. Ooh. So I'm just kind of counting down the days until we got you, Virtue. You got you.
Can you hear me?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
There he is. I was just telling the guys how I'm going on vacation next week, going to New Orleans. So if anyone has any recs for me.
Shit, dude. Good luck getting back. Up.
I know. Oh, you were just there. That's right. You had some issues, right?
I missed game 7, Pistons Cavs. I was stuck in the New Orleans airport and then the Atlanta airport all day on Sunday. Tough.
Man, that's brutal.
Respectfully, you did not miss anything. Yeah.
No, I also found $5 beers in the New Orleans airport. So I was kind of living.
That sounds like a better time than I had watching that game.
Yeah, it seems like Colton's living his best life, no? He's traveling. It's off season. He's traveling. He's in Texas. He's going to New Orleans. I mean, the guy's just
man.
Isn't that what the internet reference said? Who is that guy?
Colton Pouncey seems happy. Whoever that was that said that, I appreciate it. And I am just trying to get outside this summer. You know, go see the country. Why not?
There you go. Well, we are going to talk about the defense today. Calvin Shepard, year two, which people at the end of last season wanted him. Gone. Dan Campbell defends him. He's back. And I think this unit, there is some questions with the unit, but Calvin Shepard, I think we can assume is only going to get better. That's the projected thing with Calvin Shepard. But just on your guys' thoughts, I know they signed some guys maybe that could indicate a scheme change, but just looking at Calvin going into year two, what are maybe how you guys feel about him, your confidence level, him as the defensive coordinator, and maybe some challenges or some things you're looking forward to seeing with Calvin Shepard this year?
I generally subscribe to the idea you don't need to move on from coaches year to year. Like it's just bad business. You've kind of got to give time for things to play out, to develop, especially a young coach, first year coordinator, first year head coach. Like, a team like Arizona Cardinals, pulling the trigger every year. Like clearly they're still stuck in their perpetual rebuild for a reason. And so it was up and down with Shepard last year. I think he was trying to implement some pretty big schematic changes in terms of giving more power to the players to make adjustments in game. That was a lot for those guys, even with, some of the really intelligent players that they had. But, you say you expect improvement, and I would go as far as to say they need improvement. Given the personnel changes, and we're going to, spend the entire show kind of going through those, I would say fairly minimal on paper. This is a defense that can't afford to finish in the bottom half of the league in scoring if it ultimately wants to, chase the championship goals that it wants to.
Yeah, I think for me, I think it's kind of irrelevant how I feel about Calvin Shepard, but more relevant as how Dan feels about him. And he did not make any changes on that defensive staff at all this offseason. That told me that there's a lot of trust in there. And when you hear Dan talk about Shep, he thinks that he's going to be a rising star in this industry. And, you kind of felt like he was going to be the guy after AG for years. It's just a matter of time and a matter of when AG got that opportunity. And when he finally did, not a lot of hesitation in naming Calvin Shepard his successor. So, obviously they're very high on him. Last season was sort of a tale of two halves. In the first half, when they got to the bye, that defense was humming. We were talking about the Legion of Boom and how they were making it work with whoever they were trotting out there. And as more guys started to, exit the lineup, get hurt, you played some better teams, some better offenses, they kind of got exposed in some ways. And I thought there was kind of a failure to adjust. And I would say the one thing that I didn't love from Shep was he would come out there every other week, every time they had a bad game, and would kind of make excuses for his defense when he would go up there and say well, I'm not going to make excuses. And then he would go up there and make excuses about how they were playing. And I didn't really love that. I didn't think that was a strong sign of leadership. Now I think Shep has the chops to be a really good DC in this league. I think he's a really smart coach. I thought he did some good things last year, but I think that's part of, growing on the job. This was his first year in that role. I would expect some of that to change next year and this season upcoming. And I would expect him to get those guys ready to play more than they were at times last year. Obviously, injuries play a factor. You never know who you're going to have available, but he did some good things last year, but some growing pains were also kind of obvious in certain ways.
Yeah, so J-Raj, I agree. You don't want to be cycling through coaches every couple of years, but it does kind of feel like if this defense has a great year under Shep, they might be looking for a new D coordinator next offseason. I mean, he's already very clearly on head coaching radars and landed an interview or two, and nearly, if you believe him, landed a job this offseason coming off a pretty mediocre season for his defense. So if he can vault this team into the upper ranks of the defense of the NFL next year, he's potentially looking at a head coaching job. For me, this season, judging Shep, it comes down to two things. I want to see him right two wrongs of his defense last year. One, limit the chunk gains on the ground, and then two, limit the third and long conversions. And these were two of things, to echo Colton's point, that he would often lament and then excuse on like his Monday or Wednesday press briefing, where he would say, well, if we just eliminated those three or four third and long conversions or those two or three chunk gains, the numbers look a lot better. And so if they can do that, I agree, the numbers should look great this year. And like, just coach the players to execute your scheme in a way that will limit the explosives for the opposition. And that doesn't seem like a massively tall task for this defense, but like last year they allowed, I looked it up today, 58 20 plus yard passing plays, which was tied for the fourth most with defenses like the Cowboys and the Titans. Like, that's just not the kind of defensive company you want to keep. So, I think a lot of those breakdowns, as Shep would probably tell you himself, came down to the players either not understanding or executing the scheme in those critical moments, either third and long or clear rushing situation. So if he can communicate those ideas and those schemes more cleanly and get them executed on Sundays, he's certainly in position to kind of announce himself as possibly the next head coach in the NFL coming out of Detroit.
I'm a little skeptical on that front, and only because I saw AG as being more ready and how long it took him. And I just think it's indicative of where the league is at. You know, still offensive minds are the ones that are getting plucked more readily. And I think it's going to take a little bit more of a sample size than maybe one good year before he gets that opportunity. But it is, you know, it is funny looking back at hindsight when Colton talks about first half versus second half, right? Like, how many Lions fans were like, AG who? And, oh my God, we're going to lose him to LSU. And it's just, you know, it's just riding the waves of the moment because the NFL does that. There's so few games, right? But I would be pretty damn surprised, even if the Lions finish top five as a defense, that like that correlates to a head coaching opportunity this quickly for Shep. I think he's going to have to do it a little bit more of a track record, just being a defensive coach more than anything.
Well, to be fair, AG got his head coaching job after his first and lone great season as D coordinator here. Like, his defense was pretty trash for the first three seasons. And once he coordinated a top 10 scoring defense with a ravaged lineup, he got his head coaching job. And, you know, I just, if this defense next year is top 10, as Shep would tell you, is top five, like it should be, wouldn't shock me if he gets the opportunity based on those results. AG had to prove it, then the opportunity came.
And it did seem like those talks seem real at midseason. Like, man, they're gonna lose Shep. They just got him. You're gonna have to rebuild again with this defense and hire someone else. In the first half, I think through the bye, the Lions were eighth in yards per play allowed and total defense. They had the second best three and out rate in the NFL. They were 12th in points allowed, third in takeaways, seventh in defensive success rate. And I think I read 25.9% of the plays they defended have gone for zero or negative yards, which was the second highest in the league at the time. So what we were seeing was a really good defense and probably a continuation of, you know, what Aaron Glenn left behind, and Shep just kind of taking the torch and saying, I'm going to, you know, put my fingerprints on this defense, but we're still going to play heavy man coverage. We're going to blitz. Like, we have this sort of identity that we like, that we think is going to work for us with the personnel that we have. And I thought that he was doing a really good job of kind of implementing his own stuff while, you know, adapting to what he was given. But in the second half, like, it was probably a combination of competition that they play, like having played the Rams and some of these teams later in the year, you know, just injuries to the secondary, the safeties. I think Detroit's secondary in particular, like with those two safeties, it allows you to do so much elsewhere. And having Kirby Joseph and Brian Branch healthy, which we'll get to later in the show, kind of allows the defense to kind of dictate elsewhere. And without those guys in the backfield, defensive backfield, I thought it really hurt Shep in certain ways that they couldn't adjust. So I don't want to blame it all on injuries. I thought, you know, sometimes they just had it taken to them, and you got to learn how to bounce back when, you know, teams kind of figure you out. But that's part of the growing process. And this is why we're talking about him in year two. You'd like to see that growth the second year. And, you know, we'll see if this defense can get right.
Jeff brought up an interesting point about schematic changes. And I think, you know, I don't think there's an overhaul coming, but I'm curious, just given, you know, the reliance a little bit more on zone late in the season, as they've kind of had to adjust to some of those injuries. Mm-hmm. We saw the blitz rate fluctuate and I think trend down at times. They're a little bit smaller on the edge with the Wanham Moore tandem versus the Marcus Davenports of the world. And so, you know, I am curious, as we kind of get eyes on this thing through training camp, like what kind of tweaks to the balance we see in year two. What did he learn from maybe those experiences of going outside of the framework of what AG was doing for so many years that are applicable going forward for him?
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the defense, and we'll get into the edge, the interior. But first, got to tell you about our friends over at SeatGeek. We'll see you guys in a minute.
I've interrupted the video to tell you about a proud sponsor of Lions Collective, and that is SeatGeek. And for me, I like country, and I want to go see Morgan Wallen this summer in Ann Arbor at the Big House. And I got to get out of the house. I need something to do. So I go to SeatGeek. It's got the best deals, and I've been looking for an app to find the best deals, and SeatGeek does exactly that. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, etc. And it's very easy to use. SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated on a scale from 1 to 10, so you know what you're getting, and you just look for the green dots. Green means good, red means bad. Plus, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. So use the code COLLECTIVE10 to get 10% off any tickets you so choose. Big shout out to SeatGeek. Now let's get back to the show.
All right, let's keep talking about the defense. Edge and interior, Roy Lopez leaves. Ali McNeil's coming off an ACL injury last year, okay? And they were basically dead last in time to pressure. AQM leaves. You bring in Derek Moore, second-round pick. You bring in DJ Wanham. Now Tyleek Williams, expecting him to take a year two jump, a lean healthier. How do you guys feel about that defensive line? Because I think Amon Ross said it best. When you had a good D-line, corners don't have to work as hard, okay, if you're getting after the quarterback. But what do you guys think of what they've done in the offseason and what Calvin Shepard has at his disposal on the D-line?
I think the big question on this defensive line, the one that will probably determine how well this unit plays over the course of the season, is which Ali McNeil do they get? Are they going to get the Ali McNeil that we saw 2023, 2024 pre-injury, or are they going to get something closer to the Ali McNeil that we saw last season, who, besides like his debut, his return game against the Bucs, and maybe Thanksgiving against the Packers, was mostly a non-factor. He just never looked like that wrecking ball on the interior that we have come to know. And he did go through that weird stretch of games where he was playing on the edge, which was definitely fun in theory, but probably counterproductive to who he is and what he does on the field. And interestingly, I think a lot of people attributed his slump or his struggles to the fact that he hadn't found his footing physically coming off the ACL tear. And certainly some of that has to be true. But when you talk to him late in the year and Dan Campbell about him, they both said that it just looked like he was thinking too much. Like he wasn't processing the game as smoothly or as cleanly as he had pre-injury. Like, this is what Campbell said. This is maybe like mid-December. I went back and looked today. He said, sometimes you process things a little bit too much. Instead of cutting it loose, you're thinking about the look, what's the formation, all these things. But I know that he believes he can play better. And we all do. And Aleem like echoed all that. He was like, I'm trying to process a lot more to make more plays. And in the end, I'm seeing too much instead of what I need to see. And, you know, he felt like at times last year, he was thinking like a linebacker while trying to play D tackle. And it ended up resulting in a player that was invisible at times. And that was jarring for a guy who was like on the cusp of, you know, Pro Bowl caliber play on the cusp of maybe top 10 defensive tackles in the NFL before his injury. And in 2023 and in 2024, Aleem McNeil had zero QB pressures in just one game in each of those seasons. And last year it happened in four games. So basically half the games he played. And, you know, I wonder, can he follow the Derrick Brown path? And Derrick Brown is someone I mentioned last week as kind of a rising star at D tackle with the Panthers. He tore his MCL and needed surgery in the first game of the 2024 season. So missed all of that year, had the full year to recover, and came back last year and reasserted himself as one of the best interior defensive linemen in the NFL. And, you know, I would like to believe that Aleem McNeil, with you know, a similar recovery timeline, can get back to that level. Because when he's wrecking games on the interior, as he was in 23 and 24, it goes a long way towards making that front seven just much more dangerous.
It's such a big year for him too, right? Like it almost feels like a contract year in some ways. And it's only the second year of his contract, but you know, he's rolling into a situation where he's got a nearly $28 million cap hit in 27, and the Lions are only on the hook for $13 million in dead money. So like they need him to bounce back. Now, shout out birthdays. Aleem McNeil just celebrated his 26th.
Hell yeah. Some Culvers.
We're talking about a dude that didn't really lose strength and gain some flexibility during his rehab. He just had some rust. And so I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Like I really do feel like a bounce back is inevitable physically. You know, sometimes it takes a little time coming back from such a serious injury like that and trying to jump back into football midstream after a year. So, you know, I'm pretty confident. I'm pretty interested in, you know, what Tyleek Williams has to offer.
Yeah.
Right. Like I feel like it was I don't want to say a disappointing rookie season. It's really tough to say disappointing with a guy that's kind of playing nose tackle reps, but I really liked the way he closed the season. And I thought, even though I think it was only 20 snaps in week 18, like he felt difference making in that Chicago game, you know, tackle for a loss in the run game, a key QB pressure. And the one thing he does really well that the Lions just kind of lack is getting hand into a passing lane. Like he batted down several balls. I think he had more bat downs last year than the entire defensive line had the year before, if I remember correctly. And so it feels just with the way he closed last season that he's primed for that classic year one to year two jump. And, you know, you got those two pieces together. You know, the Lions have left me no other option than to believe they believe in Levi Onwuzurike, right? Like there just is no other obvious number three on the roster right now. And so, you know, the depth I think is extremely interesting on the interior.
J-Raj, would you say that year one to year two jump is the biggest jump that players make in the NFL?
Get out of here, Will.
Justin's favorite narrative right there. Yeah, I would agree with both of you guys. I think I'm not worried about Aleem, first and foremost. Like that he's a stud. Like I'm just not worried about him. I think he took some time to shake off the rust. I think he'll bounce back this year and go back to being, you know, the 2024 version of himself where he was top 10 in win rate, top 15 in pressures. He was a beast that year, and he did it against the pass, he did it against the run. So he's really a complete defensive tackle. And at just 26, you don't give up on a guy like that. Not saying the Lions are, but I have the utmost confidence in him bouncing back. And I really like the fit of Aleem and Tyleek. And if you remember last year, the one player that everyone kept comparing Tyleek to was Aleem. Now they're different players stylistically. Tyleek is a little bit bigger. Aleem obviously had the growth where he changed his diet and cut a lot of weight to be, you know, a better pass rusher. I don't think the Lions are going to ask that of Tyleek. I think they like him in that nose tackle role. But they're just so light on their feet. They're so instinctive. Like Tyleek, when you watch him at Ohio State, like he's looking for cues in the backfield about what the play is going to be. He's kind of reading the quarterback, reading the running back, like, okay, is he running to the right? He's running to the left. And his film study, I think you kind of saw it show up in those games. And so as a rookie, you know, they kind of threw him to the fire early on without Aleem. And, you know, I thought he was treading water for most of the season. And I liked what I saw of him late in the year. I would agree with that, Justin. So I think by default they have to rely on these two, but I also think that they're a really good duo for what the Lions want out of that interior. And then when you get to Levi, he's sort of a wild card to me, man. Like I want to believe that he can, you know, when he was playing in 2024 and healthy, that was the first like full healthy season we saw from Levi. I guess I don't even know if he was fully healthy then, but he was playing a lot of games back then, and he was a good player. The sack production wasn't there, obviously, but the underlying metrics, like the pressures and win rate, that was all there in sort of this like hybrid role where he's playing defensive end sometimes, kicking inside sometimes. So I thought he was a really valuable piece. And I think a lot of us were shocked when the Lions were able to get him for, I don't remember how much he got, like $4.5 million, something like that. Maybe three and a half. I was shocked. And I don't know if, you know, the knee injury had to factor into that. That would make some sense after the fact, but I really don't know the timeline there. But, you know, obviously it's tough to lose a guy last year like that. That was so key to what you did in the interior. I think we saw the effects of, one, Aleem missing time with that injury and not being consistent when he returned, and Levi just not being available. You saw the effect that had in terms of an interior rush from season to season. I think Levi and Aleem were top 15 in pressures and win rate. And last year, the Lions didn't have a single player in the top 35 in either of those categories, I believe, among defensive tackles. So it's tough, man. It's tough to lose two guys like that, but I think Aleem's going to bounce back. And I think they're hoping, they have no other choice but to hope that Levi can be that guy again for them. So I question a little bit with the run defense depth, you know, losing Roy Lopez, losing DJ Reader, but I think they're just counting on someone being able to step up there.
Yeah, I like the self-evaluation that Ty Lee did at the end of the season. You know, he said he would grade himself kind of a CC+, and that felt like a pretty fair, honest assessment of the way he performed from start to finish. And look, he played a lot early on, but before Aleem was healthy, and then, you know, he saw his role reduce kind of mid-season when Aleem came back, and then for a while he was passed on the depth chart by Roy Lopez, and there were a couple of weeks where he was barely on the field, and I remember Campbell being asked about it, and he cited just like consistency as the issue for Tyleek. And you have to remember, Williams, like, he was learning to play in a much stricter scheme up front than the one he played in at Ohio State. Like, you really don't have the freedom in this scheme to occasionally jump out of gaps to hunt the football, as we heard in training camp whenever he would get reamed out by Campbell or anyone else for occasionally doing that. And I think he did have that latitude at Ohio State. And so, I think it took him some time to kind of rewire his brain as to how to play defense in this defense. And once he did, you could tell that it clicked in the second half, and his snaps went back up to where you would expect him to be for a first-round pick.
I'm going to fast forward the discussion here for the sake of brevity, because I think we've covered the topics pretty thoroughly. But obviously, there's been a lot of changes on the defensive line, right? Like, and maybe when I wrote it out, I didn't fully appreciate it, but Lopez out, Reader out, Marcus Davenport, Pascal, Muhammad, right? But I think we have a pretty good feel for what the top of this depth chart looks like, right? Like, DJ Wonnum is almost certainly going to start opposite Aiden Hutchinson. Derek Moore is going to come in. He's going to be the backup to both, really, play probably 25, 30 snaps in that rotational role. Like we just talked about, Levi is going to be the third in the defensive tackle room. It gets really interesting, I think, at those fourth spots on the depth chart, right? Like, you've got some really interesting contenders at edge, including a former first-rounder veteran, a couple late-round draft picks in both those spots. And so, you know, I think our discussion is maybe better served here on how you think those final spots, whether you want to call it 4-4 or maybe a flex fifth at one of those spots. How do you guys think maybe that'll shake out before, obviously, we get our eyes on these guys on the field?
Yeah.
So, I mean, go ahead, Colin.
I was going to say, like, if we're talking about sort of the last spots, maybe undecided, like, I'm curious mm-hmm. about Ahmed Hassanin.
Yeah.
I mean, they were, I don't want to say raving about the guy in training camp, but, like, you know, he was giving guys issues with his effort, probably annoying some of those veteran linemen. But you know, he was saying, I'm watching everything Hutch is doing. I'm trying to soak up everything I see on the field. I'm just trying to be here and learn from everyone. I'm trying to be Hutch, right? And he had such like this curious fascination with the game and like this pure soul. but that can only take you so far, right? He was a sixth round pick. He missed the whole season. So he's sort of a wild card, but like, I'm curious to see how he performs. If he can lock down one of those jobs with another year under his belt, because he always seemed like a developmental guy. I don't think any of us really expected him to contribute at a high level as a rookie. And then he got hurt. But to me, he was always like a year two, maybe year three effort guy that you can kind of place on your roster and say, we know what we're going to get from him when we put him in a game for 8 to 10 snaps. So if he can take on a role like that, I'm curious to see how he would perform in that situation. You got guys like Peyton Turner, who I think is sort of a wild card at this point. Like, he hasn't really done much in the league. Kind of a disappointment for where he's at in his career, but maybe change of scenery and, you know, landing here as a rotational guy can get him back on track. I think Skylar Gil Howard, I'm excited to see what he can do if we're just talking about the rookie class. His story is really fascinating, so I think that's what drew me into him. But when you hear, okay, he was a linebacker, he had to bulk up to play defensive tackle, he's kind of worked his way up the ladder. I'm curious about guys like that. I really am. And I think, you know, if I'm like Mekhi Wingo, yeah, I'm not feeling like my spot's safe with a guy like that around the building now. So
you weren't pumped about that pick if you were Mekhi Wingo.
Not at all, dude. Not at all. So yeah, like I agree, Justin. I think like the back end is really fascinating. I think we pretty much have an idea of what the starting lineup is going to look like and even the key guys in that rotation. But when you get a little bit lower, a lot of names and just not a lot of like, you know, firm like roles carved out right now as at this point as we're talking about it in May.
Yeah, I got a couple wild cards for you, and I actually wrote them down under that description today. So, Justin, you mentioned the departures across the defensive line. The two departures on the interior are huge. Like, DJ Reader played 200
physically. Points.
They are girthy departures. But DJ Reader played 240 snaps in the A-gap last year, which was by far the most on the defense. Roy Lopez played the next most at 87. After that, the third most snapped player in the A-gap for the Lions defense was Aleem McNeil with 40 snaps. So, like, in other words, 90% of the A-gap snaps that this defense played last year are gone in the form of DJ Reader and Roy Lopez. Like, there's a pretty sizable hole in the middle of the D-line for a team that, let's face it, was not pleased with how it stopped the run at the end of last season. So back to those two names, Jay Tufele. It feels like he's going to have to play some sort of run-stopping role in this defense. And when you look at his snaps over the course of his career, he's actually been more of a B-gapper. Like, he's not quite in that DJ Reader mold, but he probably fits more of the Roy Lopez prototype. And then the big one is the one we mentioned a couple weeks ago. It's the undrafted free agent out of Cal. And Jay Raj, I'll let you pronounce his name again because you did a bang-up job last time.
Hey, good news. Found a nickname for him, fellas. Big Kahuna.
Hell yeah.
We will not forget Big Kahuna.
Big Kahuna for the other Aiden on the defensive line. But like, he is on this roster now, the closest thing to DJ Reader just from a physical type. 6'3", 320, like a true space eater, anchor in the middle of that defensive line. At least he was at Cal. And, you know, you look at some of his PFF grades as a run defender. He was the fifth highest graded run defender in the country last year. And that list was topped by two guys who went very early in the draft, and Caden McDonald and Christian Miller. So I don't know. I look at the hole that's been created by the departures of Reader and Lopez, and the two guys who seem most capable to fill it would be an undrafted free agent and a veteran free agent who signed very late in the process. So maybe that hints at some scheme changes up front, but feels like those two guys might play a bigger role than you would assume for a team with major ambitions entering this season.
And just I was going to say the pronunciation. I just looked it up. Aiden Kiana Aina.
There it is. I'll never forget it.
Big Kahuna.
I like Big Kahuna. I'm glad you, to be fair.
That's good.
I'm glad you brought up the A-gap stats, because it's interesting, because people came so obsessed about the nose tackle position, and we assume, and I think rightfully so, that Williams is going to fill a lot of that. But Lions only had 381 of those snaps total last year. So you're only running out an A-gap guy a third of the time anyway, right? And so there's probably, you know, maybe 10, 15 snaps a game to be had in that fourth defensive tackle role, and maybe fewer than that really is the run stuffer type. you know, a few other names I'm really interested in this mix are the two rookies. Gil Howard, who's kind of that undersized pass rushing type, but quite frankly, his run defense, even though it was limited, surprised me. I mean, maybe it was the former wrestler in him, but I felt like he really held his ground, played with good leverage. He has a really interesting, intriguing, whatever you want to call it, swim move that gave guards in the Big 12 problems. Now, look, a guard at Utah is different than a guard for the Minnesota Vikings. I need to see how that translates. You know, there's going to be some polish, some finesse, some perfection to it. But I do think there's, you know, some upside there as a pass rusher. And then Tyre West, you know, again, like a really interesting usage player in college. Didn't play a ton in a pretty deep Tennessee room. I thought at his size with his length, because he's got, you know, 33-plus inch arms, he's 280 pounds, I thought he was going to be like this really stout run defender. And what jumped out through to watching his film was how deep kind of his tool set was as a pass rusher. He's got all the moves, right? He's got the swipe and the club and the rip and the bull rush and the long arm that he uses situationally, and none of them are perfect. Like, he's still kind of developing, but you saw flashes with all of them. And so I think there's a really, you brought up Hassanin. I think Hassanin's still a year away, and I think the Lions can leverage kind of his loyalty to the organization and just say, hey, we need you on the practice squad for another year, big guy. And
they'd be like, sir,
I'm all in. Yes. I think it's going to come down to West and Turner, really. Like, Turner, obviously the first round pedigree, but you know, he's got the Davenport thing going on where he just can't stay healthy. West's upside, if it pops immediately in these training camp practices, if he's out there, you know, given Larry Borum and Gio Manu problems and, you know, porting that into the preseason, given some of these number two tackles problems, like, I could see this kid coming out of training camp with a roster spot just because of the upside. Look, at he needs to be Tyrus Wheat. You know, Tyrus Wheat played, what, 5 to 10 snaps a game?
Yeah.
Maybe you could find some kind of special teams role, because we know Dave Phipp likes to find a special teams role for, you know, one of these bigger guys, whether it be Pat O'Connor or Wheat. You know, if he can fill that void, you know, I think he's kind of a sneaky guy that could slide onto the roster with a good camp.
Dude, poor Hassanin, man. Like, you start saying things like, I'll fill up the water bottles if you need me to, enough times, and they actually take you seriously.
They believe you.
Like, all right, well, go ahead and do that then, brother. I know we're already tight on time here, but if I can backtrack briefly to, you know, a presumed starter of this group, or at least a presumed impact player, I think Derek Moore's college stats are just briefly worth considering. Like, it was notable to me when Brad Holmes said after the draft, you know, I'd watched him pretty steadily for 4 seasons, had seen him make gradual progress at Michigan, and was just still not entirely sold ahead of the draft or ahead of the Senior Bowl on his rush ability, like, still had some questions there. And then he went to see him play in Mobile at the Senior Bowl, and over that week he got the answers he needed. But, like, those answers might have existed in the first, or those questions might have existed in the first place, because, like, Derek Moore, compared to most elite edge rushers in the country last year, wasn't playing a whole lot against the pass. Like, he averaged 19 and a half pass rushing snaps per game, 234 total over the course of the year. Just to compare that briefly to other guys who went high in the draft: David Bailey, 27 pass rush snaps a game. Reuben Bain, 35 a game. Akeem Mesidor, 30 a game. Even the guys in the second round, Cassius Howell, Zion Young, Gabe Akis, were all around like 25 pass rushing snaps per game. And again, Moore was at 19 and a half. And the only guys, edge rushers, who were drafted in the first two rounds who played a similar amount of their snaps per game as a pass rusher were Malachi Lawrence, who had 7 sacks, and R. Mason Thomas, who had 6.5. And again, Derek Moore, with that sort of limited deployment, produced 10 sacks and 41 pressures. So, you know, I feel like it's worth pointing out that, like, that the numbers he did put up, based on how little he was used relative to most guys of his stature, you know, it bodes well for his ability to make a pretty early impact in the NFL. And then just lastly here, because Holmes mentioned it himself after they drafted him, one of the benefits should, in theory, be giving Hutchinson just a few more blows per game. He was the only edge rusher in the NFL last season who played 1,000 snaps of defense. Like, it was just a huge workload. And the next closest was Max Crosby at like 930, Miles Garrett and Brian Burns and Jared Verse, who were all under 900. So, like, Hutch was playing 60 snaps a game. Most of the elite edges were playing closer to 50. If Moore can help him get 5 to 10 more breathers a game, you might see an even more explosive Hutch, especially, you know, second half, fourth quarters of games where they really need him to be at his best.
Well, let's transition here because we have to hear from our friends over at Prize Picks. And today, I have some picks for you, fellas, for the NFL season. Amon-Ra St. Brown. I'm going Moore on 12.5 rushing yards. Yeah. 12.5 rushing yards. I'm going more. Jahmyr Gibbs, more 3.5 receiving touchdowns. Here, let me throw this on screen for you guys. There you go. Bang. Sorry about that. All right. Amon-Ra, 12.5 rushing yards, more in the Jahmyr Gibbs, 3.5 receiving touchdowns, more for the upcoming NFL season. So you can't convince me you're not going to hand the ball to Amon-Ra St. Brown on a run. I mean, are you talking about 12 yards for the whole season? That's an easy one. And then Jahmyr's going to be more involved in the passing game, of course. Use the code HMA, play $5, get $50 instantly. Shout out to Prize Picks for being a proud sponsor of Lions Collective. Now, we have to get to the linebackers, safeties, and corners. I know linebacker Anzalone left. Speaking of one of those departures we were talking about earlier with Roy and with DJ Reader, Anzalone's no longer here. I don't know. That's where the scheme change kind of comes up because they're running mostly a base defense. If you want to continue to do that, which linebacker? I know you drafted Jimmy Rolder, probably not going to be someone you depend on right away. But just looking at this linebacker room, how do you feel about it currently, fellas? Is there more that has to be done maybe in free agency? Are you comfortable with it? And if so, what does it look like this year for week one of the NFL season?
Man, Anzalone's getting the ex-girlfriend treatment from this fan base. Totally. Come out, say a couple negative tweets, a couple salty tweets, and like you suddenly weren't as good as we remember you. Goodbye, good riddance. It's rough out there for.
He knows how it works, though.
I know he does. I know, but like, I think, you know, those fans are going to realize how difficult he is to replace, right? Like, good production, good leader, brings juice, right? Like, he's an energy guy, and even though like the reins of the defense were handed to Jack Campbell, like. He was a backstop and kind of helping getting guys aligned, making sure everybody was set up, helping with those checks and calls that we talked about with the audibles that were built into to Shep's defense. Like you just don't replace that overnight. It's going to be tough. I understand why they went a different direction, but you know, I don't think, you know, they've got a plug and play option. I strongly believe Malcolm Rodriguez is going to open the season as a starter. I think they trust him. I think he has been in that role. Shep obviously loves Malcolm Rodriguez. I've always had, you know, pretty great admiration for his instincts as a run defender. Kind of going through the Aleem McNeil thing with the knocking off some rust last year, coming back from his own ACL injury. His actually involved a cleanup procedure that made the recovery time a little longer. He's not great in coverage, but look, guy played safety in college at one point. Like, he at least understands the concepts. And yeah, Jimmy Rolder is the future, and he has a ton of the same kind of instincts in that coming forward, coming downhill, run game, screen pass game, like that shows up on tape. But we have to remember, this guy played less than 1,000 snaps in college defensively, and where that showed up huge was zone defense. Like, just, I mean, downright looked confused a lot with his positioning pre-snap, post-snap. He's got a lot of room to grow, I think, between now and the start of the 2027 season, when I think they're going to expect him to be that starter. But I do not think it's week one, and I'm not even sure it's going to be something where he takes the reins at any point this season.
Linebacker is such an interesting position because while they addressed it with Rolder, that's still more of a long-term play, I think. And they brought back Malcolm, but you do lose Anzalone. And I, you know, for what they asked Anzalone to do, he was such a good fit here. But they couldn't really justify the price and felt like they need to go get a little bit younger there probably. But man, like, I don't think they can play the same defense that they were playing with Anzalone. Like, you can't just ask Malcolm Rodriguez to play the Anzalone role. You can't. He's just not that guy. He's not great in coverage. He's great, instinctive, and a downhill linebacker. Like, for that stuff, he's going to be excellent on early downs and run situations. But I just go back to Dan at the owners' meetings when he's talking about reviewing the defense with Shep and saying, look, we basically got three different installs based on who we get from here on out and like what our roster looks like, you know, a month or two from now. And that's why I'm curious, you know, when OTA starts, like, you know, what's that going to look like when these guys are on the field together? Because I could see them maybe shifting away from the heavy amount of base that they were playing under Shep. And that sounds weird to say because Shep's a linebacker, but if you don't have the personnel to run what you were doing in the past, why do it? Like, why would you force it? I don't think that they would do that if they don't feel confident in the players that they have to operate that defense. And so I look at the personnel and I see Malcolm and I'm like, he's a liability in coverage. And I look at Jimmy Rolder, I'm like, he's a rookie. So maybe you go to a defense that just emphasizes Derek Barnes and Jack Campbell, and maybe you get like heavier nickel usage on the field this year and change things up based on what you have. And you hope that a guy like Rolder can come along and, you know, maybe you put Malcolm out there for early downs. You figure it out a certain way, you know, get the most out of these guys. But I don't think this defense is going to look similar to last year just based on the personnel they have.
Yeah, I agree, although it still raises the question. Like, in a league shifting towards more and more 12 personnel and 13 personnel, who's covering tight ends next season? Like, who's taking that job on? Because Anzalone was their guy almost always last year, and he did the job pretty darn well if you trust the numbers. And Derek Barnes and Jack Campbell didn't, if you trust the numbers. Like, Jack Campbell, 61 targets in coverage last year, allowed a passer rating of 112.2. Derek Barnes on 28 targets in coverage allowed a passer rating of 112.4. Both of those marks were in the bottom 60 of like 80 qualified linebackers. And Anzalone was up near, and you know, he was top 10, I believe, in rating allowed, and even top 5 in completion percentage allowed. And look, not all targets are created equal. Sometimes it's just a running back coming out of the backfield. But Anzalone was and is a good coverage linebacker. And look, Jack Campbell made strides there last year, but it's still not his strength. And I agree. I don't think Derek Barnes or Malcolm Rodriguez is cut out for that job. Maybe the Lions see some more untapped coverage potential in Jimmy Rolder than the rest of us do, or most of us do. And maybe he kind of takes over that job as the year goes on, but a lot to ask a rookie. So I guess that's my biggest question for that linebacker group. Like, who's covering tight ends? Who's stepping up in coverage? Because otherwise, I against the run, it looks like it should be a pretty stout unit.
I will say Rolder a little bit better in man coverage. Like, he's obviously very physically gifted. He's got the size to handle that responsibility. It's the zone stuff that really trips me up. But, you know, you want to bring up passer ratings, Malcolm, career 102. Like, again, I think he's not as bad as we think he is. Obviously, he's got some size limitations that hold him back in all aspects of the game, but particularly coverage. But, you know, I think he can hold his own, I think, against tight ends and maybe some of those earlier downs, especially the tight end twos that are coming in these 12 personnel. But I think the answer, obviously, is Brian Branch when he gets healthy, and probably Chuck Clark until he does.
Yeah, and maybe honestly a little bit of Christian Isian. We can get into him in the next segment. But I think he has real potential with some of like the thickness to play in the slot against tight ends. But just to tie that off, like Campbell did by coverage grade make strides in coverage last year. But look, the completion percentage allowed, Anzalone allowed the fourth lowest among qualified linebackers last year, tied with Zach Bond, who obviously is an all-pro caliber linebacker for the Eagles. So they will feel and notice his absence. It's a matter of how quickly they can replace him.
Well, let's get to the safeties and corners. Well, safeties meaning Kirby and Brian, and if they're how healthy they're going to be. Corners, Darren Arnold obviously is a big one. DJ Reed, I know we got hurt, him coming back, being healthy, and hopefully being more of the DJ Reed you saw earlier in the season. But how do you guys feel about that secondary going into this upcoming year? I know they added some depth, more guys that can play nickel, have some versatility, Chuck Clark a veteran, so they've done a good job of adding more bodies. But how do you guys, what do you guys feel about the secondary as of right now heading into the season?
I want to take every opportunity we can to pour one out for Amik Robertson. We're going to miss him. We're going to miss him so much. And at some point, we're not going to be able to talk about it anymore, but every time I get a chance, just a little bit more out for the beat that's going to suffer without him. And look, the fans should miss him too. I mean, this was a guy that, yeah, took some chances, got burned on occasions, but like he always stepped up to the plate. And he was good in run defense. He played better in nickel than anybody anticipated, certainly based on his Vegas resume or wherever the Raiders were playing in those days. And he fought his ass off on the perimeter. So, like, I think Amik, similar to Alex, is going to be tough to replace. I think Roger McCreary is replacement level. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. I just think he's just a guy that he's not going to be bad, but he's not going to be good either, which is why I believe – Keith Abney, the rookie, the fifth rounder, will be starting by the end of the season. I said Roller probably won't be. I think Keith Abney has taken that job. I saw a lot of Amik Robertson in his game. I think he tackles exceptionally well. I think he has really great anticipatory skills in terms of covering slants, those routes that come back to the football. Maybe not the long speed to cover some of the crossers or the sail routes that you might see from some of the better slot receivers in this league. But the one thing that's holding Abney or could hold Abney back from taking that job really quickly is, for whatever reason, despite all the other things in his skill set that suggest it won't, he really gets hung up on some blocks on the perimeter. Like, wide receivers will just stymie him, and it's baffling. And you can't have that from a nickel, because that's what leads to those explosive runs that Will was talking about way back in the opening segment. Like, Abney, in the open field, when he has a chance to square up a ball carrier, he's exceptionally reliable. Gets square, plays through the body of the ball carrier, brings him down to the turf consistently. But if a receiver gets his hands into him, he really has trouble shaking that. If he can get past that, if he can show that skill early, I think, you know, the starting job will be his by the midpoint of his rookie season.
When I look at the cornerback room, I see depth. Like,
yeah,
you know, when you DJ Reed, like, the hamstring injury really set him back, and I don't think he was willing to admit that, but
yeah,
when we talked to him, he was like, bro, I thought I tore it off the bone. Like, I thought it was bad. Like, I thought it was done for the season, essentially, is what he was telling us. So to return when he did, like, it's commendable, but I don't know if he was 100% healthy. I think he was just kind of gutting it out for the team, and you saw the effects. Like, he was not the same player when he returned, but the first 4 weeks of the season, I thought he was playing some pretty good football. That's a guy you're paying $16 million a year to. So you expect a certain baseline level of play from him. And they just didn't get it last year because of, I'm blaming the injury. Maybe it was more than that, but you just didn't get it last year. Terrion's situation is still a little bit up in the air. Like, I think maybe we're expecting him to be there, but like, if this escalates his situation, then we don't know what his status is going to look like. But I thought Terrion made some strides last year in his second year. Now, I thought he was less handsy than he was as a rookie. I thought
not hard
to do, right? But I thought he made some strides there. Now Kelvin Shepard is out here like openly challenging him, like, yeah, enough talking, like, you got to be a guy now. So this is an important year for him just to prove he can live up to that first round billing. But I think he's got the tools. He's just got to stay out of the headlines, man. Just put your head down and like go to work. Like, it's really that simple. You got all the tools to do it. Just go prove that you can be that guy that they drafted you to be. So I would be right there with Shep challenging Terrion this year in year three. But behind those two, say, you know, there's an injury or something happens to one of those guys, I feel pretty good about the depth they have between Rocky Sin, who they brought back. I thought that was an awesome move to get him on the contract that he did. Ennis Rakestraw, I tend to like him at nickel more, but they seem to like him on the outside. And so if those are your three and four cornerbacks, like, you have to feel pretty good. And maybe you can throw McCreary in that mix, but they think they see him as more of a nickel. But then to bring in Abney, as Justin mentioned, like, I was shocked that he was available in the fifth round that they got him. Yeah, I was shocked because he was, I think, 61st on Dane's board, like top 60, top 70 player, falls all the way to round five. I see some Amik, but I think he can be an upgrade over Amik. And one thing I'll say about Amik, for as great of a quote as he was to us, and like, I always appreciate my conversations with him. Like, he was one of the realest dudes in that locker room. And, you know, that's that's high praise coming from me because there's a lot of good dudes in the locker room. He allowed the third most touchdowns among corners last year, and I believe the third most passing yards if you go by PFF. So he took some chances. He took some chances, man, and like, yeah, he told us after one game, I got greedy. He did. He got greedy last year, and like, he was taking some chances that he probably shouldn't have taken, and that has to add up after a while. You need a guy that can play in the structure of the defense, and so as feisty as he is and as competitive as he is, and I think his like reception rate was still pretty good overall, those chances hurt the Lions in some of those games. And like, if you can get a guy that's a little bit more disciplined, I'm not saying Abney's that guy, because Abney's got some wild tape out there too. He's a little, he takes some chances there too. But if you can get a little bit more consistency from that position, I think you're feeling pretty good. Maybe McCreary starts a year and maybe Abney takes over second half, but I like the cornerback room. There's obviously some questions there with Terrion and whatnot, but like DJ, I'm not really worried about him the same way I'm not worried about Aleem. Like DJ has just been so consistent in his career that like I look at last year as a bit of an anomaly, and I'm expecting him to get back to that play that they are paying him to be. Now the safety room, entirely questionable. Like I have no idea how Kirby's going to look with that knee. The fact that like we get to the combine and owners meetings and they're still kind of like ho-hum about him, it's concerning to me. I have no idea like what he's going to look like this year, or if the rest was just enough for him to, okay, we feel good, we're just going to like take things slow with him. If that's the case and you get him to the regular season and he's good to go, fine. But we're going to have to see it at least in training camp or maybe OTAs if he's out there. And Branch, obviously, we might not see for a little bit. So in terms of depth, I thought they did a good job just based on their budget. But I was hoping that they could add one in the draft because I thought there was a pretty good safety draft. I don't think Brad Holmes agreed. He kind of said, I didn't really see it that way, but some of you guys think it was a good safety draft. I would like to see them add like one dude there that can play that role, but you know, they didn't think it was good enough. So they're rolling what they have, and they got some names like Avante Maddox, Thomas Harper, Izian can play there, Chuck Clark. So, you know, they've got some names, but we just got to see how it shakes up.
Yeah, because our guy Bud Clark got sniped early, Will.
Yeah, dude. I'm checking around. What's going on?
That was early, man.
Mama Ray's a born killer and a second round pick.
Great spot too, the Seahawks, right?
Yeah. Shout out to Meek, dude. So like we're trying to have a couple players join the podcast over the next couple weeks here, like newcomers to the roster, veterans or draft picks. We could ask a Meek as a commander and he would come on the Lions Collective tomorrow. That dude's a real one. look, I wanna hit on Terrion briefly. You know, in the same way that Aleem to me is the linchpin, maybe the X factor of the defensive line, it's Terrion in the secondary. And look, dude, like assuming he's on the field, assuming he isn't incarcerated when the season begins, like it's time, brother. It's time. Yeah. Like the other corners who went early in the 2024 draft, Quinyon Mitchell, who went 22nd, was an immediate star for the Eagles. Nate Wiggins, who went 30th, has become a real solid, dependable corner for the Ravens. Even Terrion's teammate, Kool-Aid McKinstry, who went 41, came on last season, had a pretty good year, some good ball production. And then Kamari Lassiter, who I know is more of a slot corner, but went 42nd, was an immediate difference maker for the Texans. And so, like, the way I'll frame this is, like, Terrion, are you one of those guys? Or are you Deontay Banks, who went 24th overall in 2023, the year before Terrion to the Giants, and has been like mostly torched over three seasons in New York? And Terrion, I think on balance has played better than Banks, but to me, like those are the stakes entering year three here. You need to prove that you can be a difference maker, a number one corner in the NFL by year three, or frankly, it's not going to happen. Like that's just not how development arcs work for highly drafted cornerbacks. So a lot on the line in my eyes for him in year three of his career, again, assuming he's on the field. And then I mentioned Izian. I got a split here in a minute, so I'll try and keep this brief. But, you know, I almost see him as like Brian Branch Light, kind of a similar skill set, kind of a similar build, the ability to probably play anywhere in the secondary, deep part of the field, in the box, in the slot. And when he was at his best in Tampa, probably was his rookie season. And he logged, I think, like almost 2/3 of his snaps that year in the slot. And like he was a real difference maker for them. And so I think there's a role for him in this defense. Maybe he's competing with Abney and with others for that slot corner role in training camp. But I remember asking him when he signed here, like, where do you feel like you're best suited to play on defense? And he said, whenever I'm close to the football or close to the line of scrimmage, I feel like I can have the biggest impact, whether it's blitzing, covering, playing zone, playing man. Just like being close to the football is always a plus. And that's why he reminds me a little bit of Brian Branch. Like early career, Brian Branch was just a menace anytime he was lined up close to the football or close to the line of scrimmage. So I know we're talking a ton about Abney, and I'm one of the guys who thinks he'll play a big role for this team in 2026, but don't discount Izzy and with just sort of the aggressiveness and physicality he plays with, and a guy that has a lot to prove after getting his job kind of taken from him by a third round draft pick last year in Tampa. So the Lions want to like kind of reclaim some of their like F you attitude. I feel like he's the kind of guy, given his background and how last season went, that will bring that saltiness, that chippiness that may have eroded at times last season.
I think you nailed it with his attitude. Definitely stuff I wrote about Izzy, and you know, just the vibes that he gave off in that first press conference, the edge. It sounded like a Lion, but I owe it to myself to go back and watch his film. I haven't got to it yet, but the missed tackles really stand out. And it's a dude that's given up, we talk about with the linebackers, he's given up nearly 80% of completions on targets for his career. And so I'm skeptical. I think the Lions targeted him early for a reason. Probably the leader in the clubhouse entering the offseason program to backfill Brian Branch's role. But, you know, I'll be on the lookout for what maybe Chuck Clark can bring to that mix as well, because I've always felt that he's kind of got some of that Branch-esque talent, certainly more of a poor man's version of it.
We'll get out of here. Appreciate you all. You guys can keep up with Lions Collective every single Wednesday at 6 p.m. There's Will. Look at that, hanging out there. I'm at the Woodward Sports
Center. Turn off Fox, too.
I mean, I'm trying to be on the road like Will and still sound decent, but we'll be back next week. Yeah, until then, hit the like button, subscribe. We'll get you guys then.